Stephanie Wesko was literally quoting scriptures about the protection of God at the moment her husband was killed. How does she deal with that?
It wasn't the kind of way that I would have chosen for God to set my husband on high, but that's where I have to trust.
This is the Revive Our Hearts podcast with Nancy DeMoss Walgemuth, co-author of You Can Trust God to Write Your Story. For July 2nd, 2020, I'm Dana Gresh. I think if I were to choose words to describe the story we've been listening to this week on Revive Our Hearts, I'd use adjectives like heart-wrenching, sad, painful, even shocking. But I'd also want to make sure I included terms like calm confidence, trusting God, at peace. Stephanie Wesko is our guest. She and her husband Charles, along with their 8 children, had just arrived in Cameroon as new missionaries in October 2018. Their love for the people and their excitement to get settled in were undaunted by the fighting in nearby regions. And really, their main motive was their love for the Lord. They were looking forward to buckling down and starting to spread the gospel. But as Stephanie shared this week, those plans suddenly and tragically were put on hold on their 12th day of being in Cameroon. Charles was killed instantly when 2 shots were fired into their vehicle. Stephanie, their 11-year-old son Charles Jr., and another missionary named Ben Sinclair were with him, but unhurt. If you missed any of the preceding programs, scroll back in your podcast feed or listen at reviveourhearts.com. Nancy sat down with Stephanie last summer, a little over half a year after Charles's death. Here's Stephanie Wesko, continuing in our series, Gunshots in Cameroon, Trusting God When the Unthinkable Happens.
So after he was pronounced dead, I remember Ben and little Charles and I just stood there and hugged, and Ben felt so bad, you know, like somehow he's just like, I am so, so sorry. And I'm like, this is not your fault. This is not, you know, this was a God thing. And
you were thinking that at this, as early as this point?
I had no other way to look at it. If I didn't look at it that way, I was going to get bitter and angry. And I knew all that would do is destroy me and destroy my kids. And looking back, when I think about the story, when I have a flashback about the story, I collapse. You know, it's like in my heart, I collapse in my memories. But God gave so much strength when I needed it. And they moved us from the room where they told us to a side room. And, you know, you're in a third world country. You're dealing with people whose English is different than yours. So, and then the military commander came in that was in charge of that region and expressed his condolences and began all the questions, you know. And it's, Cameroon is a very different culture from the States. And I think what culture shock 101 hit the day Charles died, because the way things were handled were just so different than you would have pictured things being handled in the States. But God gave so much grace, and God led us to Cameroonians, or led Cameroonians to us, that were such blessings. And that, I mean, we heard so many times, you've only been here 12 days. We are so sorry. And from the very get-go of, after the accident happened, I was so concerned that my kids not get a warped view of serving the Lord because of Charles dying, because I knew how I reacted, they were going to pick up on my reactions. And
your children didn't know yet.
They didn't know, but I had little Charles with me. And I remember saying to him that day several times, Cameroon did not kill Daddy. One person killed Daddy. It was not the country. We are not going to hate. We're going to love. And I loved missionary biographies growing up. You know, that had been kind of what I fed on growing up, was missionary biographies. But I loved the stories of like Anne and Ed and Iram Judson,
yes.
Hudson Taylor, and Jim and Elizabeth Elliot.
Mm-hmm.
And actually in 2017, I had read a biography of Jim and Elizabeth, their story to my kids.
And Jim, it was having been martyred.
Yes, Jim
when
and
they were
Saint,
early married.
Yes, it was written from a kid's perspective. The story was, it was the Trailblazer series, mm-hmm. and it was a Trailblazer book. And I remember there was facts brought out in that book that I had never heard before. One of them being that after the Akas killed those men, they saw heavenly beings. They heard singing. There was very much, God gave them a glimpse of the supernatural, of what was going on as they martyred those men.
Wow.
And I remember that day as we sat there after Charles was killed, it was almost like God gave me a glimpse that he was going to do things. There were supernatural things going on that I would never see, but that perhaps the people that were involved in Charles' death would see or had seen.
Mm.
And God flooded my heart with love for the person who killed Charles. And I don't ever remember being angry. There was never like anger towards that person. It was almost like the Lord flooded me with pity for them because I thought in some ways they just gave my husband the greatest gift that he ever could have been given of seeing Jesus face to face. And for that person, whoever it was, if they died, their future was eternity in hell. And that broke my heart because I didn't wish hell on them, even if they had just killed my husband. That was just an awful thought to me. And so, you know, I don't want to say interrogated, but, you know, you go through all the questions with the military commander, and God started throwing his gifts on us. I mean, it was just, looking back, I just marvel. This lady walks in. She was with a medical group that works there in Bemenda, and she came and sat beside me. Her name was Esperanza, and she was from Spain, and so her English was broken, but she spoke English, and I understood a little bit of Spanish. I took Spanish in high school, so between both, we could correspond fairly well, and she helped me understand some of what the commander was saying because my brain was just reeling, and so she was helping me with that, and she, you know, she just had her arm around me and was holding my hand. And she, come to find out, the group that she worked with had headquarters that were like 5 minutes from the hospital. They had provided the ambulance to bring Charles to this hospital. And so she just sat there helping me answer questions, helping me explain what was being asked. And then this doctor comes in, the Christian doctor that had been with us this whole journey from the first clinic to now. And he came over. Charles was sitting beside me, my son, and he came and put his hand on Charles' shoulder and said something about Charles having a dad who was an incredible man of God. And he said, I know that God has something very, very special for your life.
Mm.
And I don't know what led him to say that to Charles, but I think that's something Charles will never forget.
Yeah.
To have a Cameroonian say that to him right after his dad had been killed. And then he came over to me and he said, thank you so much that you and your husband were willing to come to our country. And thank you that your husband was willing to shed his blood for my people. And those words will always be just, you know, a treasure to me. And he proceeded to tell me that he pastored a church there somewhere in the city and that him and his church have been praying for revival to come to Cameroon. And he said, I really believe that God is going to use your husband's death to be the spark that lights the revival that God wants to do in Cameroon.
Wow.
And it was very ironic to me because in the month before we left for Cameroon, it was like God had brought Charles to convincement that he was going to bring revival to the United States and Cameroon. And I don't know what had brought him to that point, but he had an excitement that God was going to do something big and bring revival to the States and to Cameroon. Mm. And I was like, what? How? He's like, I don't know. He was just like on fire about it.
Mm.
And so when that man said that to me, it was almost like God saying, his death's not in vain, Stephanie.
Yeah.
God's going to use it. And those were just precious gifts. And those few minutes after finding out he was dead. And after we went through as much paperwork as we could go through there at that point, Esperanza offered to take us, Charles and I, back to their apartment. And because, of course, I was still a mess. And Ben offered, you know, he's like, I can take care of everything here. And
so it wasn't till the next day that you were able to get back to your children.
Yes, so this is still the day
of. Still didn't know.
Yes, they still didn't know. And we were thinking, I was thinking at this point still, we would go back that day. That was still my thought process of, we'll get through this paperwork, we'll get back to the kids. And we knew that there had been a battle that had broken out after Charles was shot. The commander had told us that there in the hospital. But I didn't comprehend that the roads were blocked. You know, that travel had been completely shut down after Charles was shot. And so I found out within a couple hours there was no chance we were going to get back for sure that day. And at that point, it was like maybe not even the next day. And so Esperanza took us back. And God just began opening doors to minister to other people in the midst of it. There was a man there that was also with his medical team. That was such a blessing to us. His name was Raymond. He was from Austria. And, you know, you don't expect to meet people from Greece, Austria, Korea, you know, all of these places that we interacted with in that 24 hours because of Charles' death. But he was just there. He was such an incredible support. And as Charles and I sat there after we had gotten taken back to this really sweet little apartment, and we were just sitting there in shock. And we just started praying again. And I remember praying as I had been praying, but praying specifically for the man that had shot Daddy and asking God to give us a heart of forgiveness for him and asking God to save him. And we got done praying and Raymond looked at me and I'll never forget the look on his face. And he said, can I ask you a question? I said, sure. And he said, you have me really confused. And I said, why? And he said, well, he's like, I'm a psychologist. And he said, you should be angry right now. He said, I've never seen anyone respond like this. He's like, I've seen a lot of people that have gone through trauma. And he said, I have never in my life seen someone. He said, you should be angry. You should be full of hate. And you're praying for the person that just killed your husband. And he's like, how in the world can you do that? And so you don't really envision getting to share Jesus with someone within a few hours of your husband's death, and someone from Austria, no less. But that was God's plan. And that was the first door God opened. So I like to say that's when ministry started again after Charles died, because it was like, okay, God, he's with you. This is what you have for me to do.
Tell us, once you finally did make it home to your children and you wanted to be the one to be with them when they heard this news, what was that experience like?
We got home late Wednesday afternoon, between 3 and 4. And by that point, we knew we had to evacuate. That had become very clear. And
so your whole family was going to have to leave after you had just...
Yes.
Unloaded and settled there for 12 days.
And the others, the Sinclairs, the missionaries, we were there. The Lord had made it very clear we all had to leave very quickly. And so we pulled in, parked by the house, and, you know, the kids' immediate thing is, where's Daddy? And I remember my one son saying, what happened to Daddy get arrested? And I remember thinking, if only, if only he had been arrested. And so we went inside, and Ben and I had talked on the way home, and he said, do you want me to tell them? And I said, could you? I said, I'm not sure I can do this. And it's very interesting, because just a few Sundays ago at our church, my six-year-old raised his hand, and he gave the perspective from his mind, from his six-year-old mind. And out of the blue, Sunday night during testimonies, he said, Mommy and Charles and Uncle Ben came home, and I saw Daddy wasn't with them, and he said they brought us in the living room, and Uncle Ben had devotions with us. And I thought that was so sweet that from his perspective, we sat down to have devotions. And then read Psalm 23. And then between the two of us, we got out the fact that Daddy had been killed. And there's nothing worse than watching your children be in pain. There's nothing you can do to stop it. And all I remember doing at that point was quoting verses from Psalm 18 that just came to mind about all God is to us, being our high tower, our deliverer, our fortress, our shield, our buckler. And we just sat, we prayed. And then the hardest thing was having to say, okay, kids, you have to stop crying because now we have to pack up and we have to leave. And then they're looking at you. And I remember Stephanie saying, but Mommy, we just got there. This is our home. And I said, I know, but we have to leave.
And you had just a matter of hours to do that, right?
We had less than hours. Yeah, we had 1 hour to pack and be
whatever you were going to take.
Yes. And praise the Lord for Liberty that was with us, that was there helping us. And then one of the missionary daughters, they had packed some suitcases. And the Lord so directed them. I mean, they had grabbed clothes for the funeral. They had grabbed all the important paperwork that they knew of. Just the Lord had really guided them and given them clarity. And then I had time to pack like 2 Foot Lockers. That's about all I had time to grab. And so, and I could not brag enough on my 2 oldest. Charles, obviously, he had known, and I had told him on the trip home, I said, Buddy, you've had time to process this a little bit. I said, none of your siblings are going to have time to process this. I said, we literally have to go home, grab stuff, and leave. So I'm like, I said, I know you're hurting, but I said, you and me have got to focus, and we've got to grab important stuff. And little Charles is my techno boy. And so I said, you know better than even Mommy does. I said, you grab cords, you grab hard drives, you grab computers, all of that stuff. I said, you just start grabbing that stuff for Mommy. And I am so thankful. And Daniel, my oldest, he kicked into gear. And between the two of them, they got every hard drive, every computer, every piece of electronic that needed to come back, they grabbed. And then I was grabbing, you know, I needed some clothes, so I'm grabbing clothes and looking, trying to grab wedding pictures and anything like that, you know, that can't be replaced. And there was one Cameroonian brother who became family that day, and he stuck right there beside me, and just, I was loading stuff in his arms, and he was packing it in the suitcase, and he was such a sweetheart. And you know, he kept saying, sister, we've got to go. Sister, we've got to go. And I'm like, I know, I know. And if you've ever envisioned what it will look like when the rapture occurs, that's what our house looked like. I mean, it's like we left it. There was food sitting out. I mean, it was just literally like we left it in a very, I'm like, I can't believe I'm leaving my house like this. But at that point, it didn't matter. Well, with all of us, there was 10, and then there were 6 of the Sinclairs. So there were 16 of us piled in this tiny little bus, maybe a minivan and a half was the size of this bus. And there were 16 of us plus all of our luggage. And we evacuated that way. And, you know, there's one road in, one road out of that village, and it was the same road Charles had been shot on.
So and you had to go past that
place. We had to go through that exact same place. And obviously there was a lot of tension in the air. And I will never forget Valerie, who was driving us. He just started singing. And we sang, He Leadeth Me. As we went over that spot. And though it doesn't make sense humanly, we do know God was leading us. And He protected us in so many supernatural ways in that evacuation that His hand later we saw was so clearly protecting us.
Stephanie, I want to go back to that. A couple days ago, you talked about Psalm 91.
Yes.
That you were reciting just before the those fatal shots were fired. And there's so many promises. This is a psalm that's precious to a lot of people, to anyone who's familiar with it. But it says, because you have made the Lord your dwelling place, no evil shall be allowed to befall you. He will command his angels concerning you to guard you in all your ways. Verse 14, because he holds fast to me in love, I will deliver him. I will protect him because he knows my name. I will be with him in trouble. I will rescue him, honor him. With long life, I will satisfy him and show him my salvation. And the psalm is just full of those kinds of promises that were obviously on your heart
Yes. In
those moments. Now you're many months removed from all that. How do you reconcile in your heart those kinds of promises with the experience that day where, from a human vantage point, it looks like God didn't protect your husband when he was in trouble?
Yes. Well, I struggled with that. And there was a few months where I really struggled even reading Psalm 91 because
I can see why.
I very much felt like, Lord, why did you lead me to this passage? And not that I was angry with the Lord. It was just a question of, I can't reconcile this. I don't understand. This doesn't add up to me. But the one thing that did add up was the fact that in the process of the police investigating and when Ben looked at the car after the accident, because of the kind of shot it was, there was multiple bullet holes in that car. And in all of our seats, there was multiple bullet holes. And yet none of us were hit except Charles.
Mm.
And where little Charles was sitting, it looked like somebody had sprayed it with a machine gun. And the police kept saying to Ben, how in the world did only one person die in this car? They were totally baffled as to how the rest of us walked away with not even a scratch when our seats, where we were sitting, were pelted, you know. And in that sense, God did keep his promises to us. He did protect us. There is no human explanation for why the three of us, the other three of us, didn't at the very least be seriously wounded.
Mm-hmm.
And God did keep his promise. And as you were saying, you know, how did God take Charles when he promises? And I struggled with that. And then God, he's patient, he's long-suffering, and he doesn't always answer our questions, but he gives us grace and peace and understanding along the way. And I remember it one day when I was thinking about Charles' death and thinking about verse 16, when it says, you know, I will satisfy him with long life, show him my salvation, and the beauty that Charles has been satisfied with eternal life.
Mm-hmm.
And he is seeing God's salvation in a way that I can't even see it yet. And he's experiencing the ultimate long life with Jesus. And it wasn't the deliverance I would have chosen for him. It wasn't the kind of way that I would have chosen for God to set my husband on high. But that's where I have to trust. You know, I can't reconcile all. I don't have the answers to all the questions. I can't reconcile them all. But God helped this passage as I dealt with health issues this spring. And I asked God for verses to cling to. He took me back to Psalm 91 to the end, to 14 through 16, those end verses. And I struggled. I was like, Lord, of all passages, you have your whole word. You could give me promises. Mm. You could give me some promise to claim. And it was like God trying to give me back Psalm 91 as a gift, and that it is a precious passage. And now I'm back at the place where I pray, use it again when I pray with my kids at night. And
it's interesting there. I noticed this just recently. I hadn't really thought about it before much. But at the beginning of verse 14, because he holds fast to me in love, God makes these promises to those who love him, who are called according to his purpose, is the New Testament way of saying that.
Right.
But God's call to you all through your life, leading up to marriage, those early marriage years, having children, miscarriages, loss, you mentioned the physical challenges you've had since Charles's death, and that was a scary thing for those of us who were following your story. But through this, you were realizing that God is trustworthy.
Yeah.
And There was faith and love holding fast to God, not because he does things the way you would want them done, not because he's writing the story the way it would have made sense to you or to anybody else, but in love. Yeah. And there's that relationship with the Lord there, that sweetness of drawing near to him and saying, Lord, I don't understand, but I do trust you. I know you love me, and I love you, and nothing is going to change that.
Yes. Yes, and that's the point. It's a surrender, and God's teaching me so much the whole concept that we so often, I shouldn't say anybody else, fall back on my feelings or on my emotions of I feel close to God today, or I feel like I'm in, I feel like we're really having good communion right now. And not that feelings aren't very important, but the Lord's teaching me so much every day. You know, I don't feel like getting up ever again. You know, there's a lot of things I don't feel like doing anymore. And it's like every morning the Lord brings me to that place of, okay, God, you're my strength today. I'm going to choose to trust you. I'm going to choose to take the strength that you promised to give me and the grace you promised to give me. And that's what's going to get me through today. And I love the verse that talks about his mercies being new every morning has become so precious, because he doesn't give us mercies for the next week. He gives us mercies every morning for that day. And that's become something precious that I have to hold to, that his faithfulness is great. Even when the path is so dark, I just have to hold his hand, almost like you're blindfolded, you know, and just say, okay, Lord, you're going to lead me. And that choice, it's like a choice. Faith is a choice. It's not a feeling. And the Lord's had to teach me that in a lot of ways I wouldn't have chosen to learn, but I wouldn't trade learning them.
Oh, for that kind of sweet surrender, even in the face of what the poet William Cooper called God's frowning providence. We've been listening to Stephanie Wesko in conversation with the host of Revive Our Hearts, Nancy DeMoss Wohlgemuth. And I want you to hear something Stephanie wrote during that time in just a moment. But first, let me tell you about a resource that will help you learn to trust God more, even when you can't fully understand the purposes behind the events he's allowed in your life. The resource is the book by Nancy and her husband Robert called You Can Trust God to Write Your Story. They wrote it in 2019, but it is so relevant to all our lives this year, with the coronavirus and with protests that sometimes turn violent. These are days when we all need to have the kind of faith in God Stephanie was just describing. We'll send you a copy of You Can Trust God to Write Your Story as a thank you for your donation in support of the ministry of Revive Our Hearts. In addition to the book, you'll also be the first to download a brand new discussion guide that will be out very soon. We'll provide you with a code so you can download it when it's available. This guide is ideal for use in a small group or book reading club. It goes along with Nancy and Robert's book. To donate any amount, simply visit reviveourhearts.com and click where it says donate, or call us at 1-800-569-5959. That's 1-800-569-5959. How do you grieve this kind of tragic death? Tomorrow, Stephanie will be back to tell us what it looked like in her life. But let's close our program today by listening to something she posted in those difficult days.
A week has passed since we had to leave the land we loved. My heart is still there, and I miss Cameroon so much. Not a day has gone by that a huge part of me hasn't desired to return there. So much learning once again in this new chapter of life, to be content in the place where the Lord has chosen to put the children in me.
Calling you to greater freedom, fullness, fruitfulness, and faith in Christ. Revive Our Hearts with Nancy DeMoss Wohlgemuth is an outreach of Life Action Ministries.